You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, welcome live here at Astronomicon. This is Knockouts and Three Counts. I am Devin McKenzie, and I'm here with one of my co-hosts, Mr. Kyle Collison.
What up, though?
So, we're here broadcasting live once again from Astronomicon. If you haven't made it out, please come on down here and check it out. We got some great guests, and I'm honored to welcome a legend, in my mind, a future Hall of Famer, the man that ran WCW to prominence, the great Eric Bischoff. Welcome to the show, sir.
It is great to be here. Did we have fun last night or what?
Come on, yeah, now. Man. The Dirty Dozen was the deal.
The Dirty Dozen was almost dirty.
Yeah, so some things that were said in that room stay in that room.
No doubt. That's why we take everybody's phones away from them when we get in there.
So quick question about that. You were saying that was your first time doing something like that. Do you see yourself doing those type of events more often in future?
Yeah, and for the listeners, you know, the Dirty Dozen is a situation. You know, Bruce Pritchard, who I was there with, good friend of mine, has his own podcast, as you know.
Right.
Something to wrestle with. And he's been doing the Dirty Dozen. When he goes on tour, does autograph signings, he invites 12 people to come in. And
12, quote unquote.
Quote unquote, yeah. 12 people to come in and sit down and just, you know, have a couple beers and tell wrestling stories. And he asked me if I wanted to do that when I was here in Detroit with him.
Right.
So we figured, well, instead of 12, let's do 24, since there's two of us.
Right.
And it was a blast. Everybody just sits around and has a bunch of beers, telling old war stories about wrestling and digging dirt up and having fun. It was great.
Yeah, great time. Kyle, you got a question for our guest?
So one thing that I was thinking about after we left, you know, one of my favorite things when I was watching Nitro as a kid is I loved when you guys brought in the cruiserweights and stuff.
Right.
I just kind of wondered, you know, what are your thoughts on the cruiserweight division now, especially with all the turmoil that they've had with Enzo and all that other stuff? And if you were able to do anything, if you had any say in it, like what would you do to kind of bring some of the flair back to it that it had when you guys did it?
Yeah, I mean, I get asked about that a lot, and I, look, in my opinion, the 205 Live, which is the WWE version of the Cruiserweight division, it's not really effective because the guys actually wrestle exactly the same. It's the same style, the same moves,
right,
the same pace. Everything is exactly the same as you would see on Monday Night Raw or SmackDown with, you know, the larger guys, I guess, but they call it 205 Live. You know, the reason the Cruiserweight division works so well in WCW is because it was a distinctly different style.
Right.
And I wanted it that way. I wanted the Cruiserweights to be so unique from what the viewers saw in the main event or with some of the heavier weights that it broke up the monotony and the pace of the show. And that's what I think 205 Live is missing, is that uniqueness in the style.
And I say that all the time. Like, you didn't have Hulk Hogan doing, you know,
Hurricane Rodgers.
Yeah, and stuff like that. You know, and now you can see Cesaro do the same move that Rich Swann does. So it's really the same thing.
Yeah.
And another thing about the way I think they should have done it is kept it small. If you remember the Cruiserweight Classic was at Full Sail University, the same place they shoot NXT. I felt like if they kept it small like that and made it sort of like another NXT-type program on the network in a small venue, I felt like it would have been a lot better that way than having it right after SmackDown.
Yeah, that's the other hard part is, you know, after SmackDown, the audience is exhausted.
Right.
So you don't get that great feedback from a live audience that you would otherwise get.
It's
tough. There's a lot of things I think that are wrong with it. I don't think it was really introduced properly.
Right.
I don't think there was a really good vision for it. And going back to what we said earlier, making it feel different, unique.
Right.
I think it was just kind of feels like an afterthought. Hey, let's go do this. We'll call it 205 Live, and nothing else has changed. I think it could have been big. I have no problem making it bigger. I see your point about making it smaller and making it grow kind of on its own.
Because right,
people want to be a part of making something like that popular. That's how they get invested in it.
Exactly.
So I could see how that would work. But I also understand you got to make it big. You got to make money. But there's a way to do that and still make it feel like it's something unique.
Well, the other thing that you mentioned, like with it being after SmackDown, I never understood if they're supposed to be brand exclusive to Raw. why the hell do you got him after SmackDown? Everybody knows it's after SmackDown. It kind of defeats the purpose of them being brand exclusive to Raw, really.
Yeah, right. I'm sure a lot of it is logistics. Oh, you can't do it after Monday Night Raw,
of course.
You'd be there till 3 o'clock in the morning, but.
I just thought it was funny considering they're like, yeah, they're brand exclusive to Raw, but we do the show on SmackDown. So,
well, they're just asking you to suspend disbelief.
Oh, yeah.
So, or common sense, whatever.
So one of the questions that I have is you have a very famous video out where you had your first interview with the WWE where you interviewed a broom.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, I think
you scared me for a minute there when you said there's a very famous video of me on it. Whoa, no, wait a minute. I thought I deleted that off my phone.
But I think you have like a bad rap, but you honestly have a very inspirational story. You went from interviewing a broom to honestly doing something in TV history that is amazing. You took a company that was basically faltering and had some of the greatest ratings runs in television history. So talk about your days, you know, interviewing a broom and coming up to that point in WCW where you were kicking WWE's ass.
Yeah, it was a really interesting period. And, you know, now that I'm older, you know, I look at time differently.
Right.
You know, when you're a kid, it seems like the school year is about 5 years long. You know, it takes forever to get from one Christmas to the next, your one birthday to the next. You know, just time just takes so long. Right. But as you get older, all of a sudden it goes by in a blink of an eye, you know?
Yeah.
And when I look back at that time, you know, when I interviewed the broom, quite honestly, I was working for Vern Gagne in Minneapolis at the time.
Right.
I had been working for Vern for a couple of years, and Vern, he basically had lost every nickel he had trying to keep his wrestling business afloat. He couldn't afford to pay me. I went months without a paycheck.
Wow.
I had two young kids at home. I was feeding them beans and hot dogs and
ramen noodles.
Yeah, ramen noodles. That was a special treat. The bank was foreclosing on my house. They were snatching the cars out of my driveway. It was a pretty miserable time for me financially.
Right.
And then I saw an ad in a paper for WWF. They were looking for announcers.
Really?
In the Minneapolis paper. So I sent in my information and my bio, and they flew me out to New York, and I got to the building, and they asked me a couple questions on camera, asked me to do a couple things, and then, of course, Vince threw me the broom and said, "Now, all right, now I want you to sell me this broom, kid. Sell me this broom." So I did my best job, the best job I could, trying to sell that broom, and I never got the gig, so I obviously didn't sell him the broom.
Right.
But, you know, 4 years later, and again, it seems now like, you know, that happened in a blink of an eye, but 4 or 5 years later, we were going head-to-head with him and kicking her ass, so to speak, and having a great time doing it. It was an amazing journey.
So, one of the things on our show, we have an independent wrestler on our show named Tony Thunder, and one of the conversations that we've had over the few weeks is about locker room etiquette, about how you go around, you shake everyone's hands. And one of the things he said was, and you're a perfect example of that, you be respectful to every single person in there because you never know. The guy that's, you know, getting your coffee and, you know, washing your clothes one day could be your boss, and you are a perfect example of that. So how important is locker room etiquette to you?
Well, I think it's very important, and for a lot of reasons. You know, the wrestling family is a very unique family. It's a business that not very many people get to venture into and experience. But I think it starts with, you know, if you and I are in a match, if we're in the wrestling business together and we're going to have a match, I may have never met you before, may right. not know anything about you, but to a large degree, I'm putting my life in your hands when we get into that ring, because exactly. your job as a wrestler is to protect me, mine is to protect you, and in the meantime, we're supposed to make everybody entertained.
Right.
So the very fact that, you know, I'm going to get to that building tonight and I'm going to meet somebody I've never met before, and put my life in your hand, it kind of suggests you need to have respect and trust for each other. And I think it starts in the locker room.
Okay.
Kyle? My next question, man, is with how they're doing, they've done the brand split again. You were around when they had done the brand split before. With all the new people that they're bringing in, like a Ricochet, they brought in War Machine, all these people that are coming to NXT and all these things, you know, is there anything that you can see that WWE or any of them can do that could, like, bring the ratings anywhere even semi-close to where they were when you guys were at? Because that's the thing that we hear as wrestling fans all the time is about just how far, you know, ratings have dipped and things. But we were just talking about this the other day. It seems like now has probably been the best time to be a fan in a while since since the Attitude Era, because you've got so much different stuff now.
Yeah, I think wrestling fans in general have a tendency to focus a little too much on things like ratings because they really don't understand them, number one. And number two, I think ratings don't mean as much anymore as they used to. You know, back in the Monday Night Wars, you know, television ratings basically tells you whether you were selling advertising or not. And, you know, that was probably 60% of our revenue was from the television side of our business. So, of course, the ratings meant everything to us.
Right.
But if you look at the television landscape now, you know, people get their entertainment off of television. They get it off their laptop. They get it on their mobile devices. They get it from Hulu. They get it from Netflix.
Right.
The over-the-top streaming. They get it from their podcasts. You know, people can access content in so many different ways now that naturally the television ratings aren't going to be what they used to be. But that doesn't mean that fewer people are watching wrestling. I think more people are, to your point, I think more people are watching today than ever before. It's never been a better time to be a wrestling fan or someone that wanted to break into the business. So I think people just need to lay off the ratings, especially because they don't really understand how it works.
Well, this is something him and I had talked about, too, because I went down to WrestleMania last year. I went to NXT. I went to NXT. I went to the Access. I went to Raw. I went to all those things.
Dude, oh, you're a junkie.
It was, well, you know, I work at the post office. So during Christmas time, it's our biggest season of the year. And I was like, you know what, dude? The hell with this. I'm just going to go. Went down there by myself and it was nuts. Like, they literally took over the whole city of Orlando, and I met people from, like, England, Scotland, everywhere. Yeah. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, there's that many people that, like, I mean, you know a lot of people watch it, but it was kind of cool.
Because
you see so many people from so many different places. I think, to your point, like, I mean, it totally proves the point that wrestling, even though the ratings thing and all that, is still just as big now as it's going to be, you know?
Well, I know Bruce Pritchard just joined us before Bruce jumps in here.
Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Well, thank you, guys. I just thought I'd sit down and say hello.
Appreciate it.
Hello, Bruce.
Hi, Eric.
It's been a long time.
I know. I'm trying to swallow my Starburst there. So, okay,
know,
all good.
That's why I wanted to interview you. Talking, you need a mouthful of food.
But yeah, go ahead and answer it. I forgot, what was the question again?
I just asked, you know, because we were talking about, he was talking about how the ratings weren't big. I was just saying how when I went to as big of a deal now, I just said when we went to WrestleMania, it was just amazing to me how there was that many people from that many different places that are all there the same thing. It was just kind of a cool.
Well, and again, you talk about television ratings and people will say, oh, the ratings aren't what they used to be. Well, number one, when Monday Night Raw was on USA and Nitro was on TNT, you got a lot of people flipping back and forth, right,
yeah,
to watch both shows. There was a lot of, in my opinion, duplication in that number.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't like WWE was getting a 5 and we were getting a 4, so there was a total of 9 points. I think it was probably more like WWE was getting a 5, we were getting a 4, and there was about 5.25 points. They just kind of shifted with the audience.
Back and forth.
Yeah.
All right, so we have Bruce Pritchard here now, and I felt like if we had one more person here, we could have a great table for three. So,
oh shit, here we go.
We were supposed to have a table for three in New York, and
really,
never got to do it. Yeah,
one of these days.
So, who's the three?
JBL.
That's where I heard JBL basically giving you a lot of praise for your contribution to television history too, but. So, I'm going to ask both of you, if you guys could have the perfect table for three, who would you want to do that with on the WWE Network?
Go ahead, Eric. Eric's trying to chew his Starburst now.
No, I'm thinking. I just chew when I think.
You know, the funny thing is, I'm sorry I jumped in to help you swallow, but the day before we did it, or 2 days before we did it, Eric, Layfield and I went to lunch, and we had basically a table for three, and we started laughing, going, this is good stuff. They should just shoot this.
Right.
So I think that would have been a great one, and sorry we didn't get to do it.
Well, the one that the episode of Sam Roberts' show that you guys did was funny as hell to listen to. Listening to the three of you guys, man.
Right. We had fun.
You could tell, and I think that's what makes that stuff good, man.
Well, my suggestion is I would love to have Eric Bischoff, Vince McMahon, Paul Heyman the three guys that ran those companies during the Attitude Era, I think that would be a great table for three, just to hear the war stories and how competitive it really, really was between the three of you, if there was competition.
Well, of course it was competition, but I don't know. I don't think we'll ever see that one.
I doubt it, but that's
a real fantasy booking going on there.
Yeah, it is, and unfortunately, so much of it is with the ECW audience. I think that audience was
B-42, by the way,
B-42. You know, that audience was perceived to be much larger than it ever actually really was. Very vocal audience. But at the same time, I don't know that it was this great big audience, because if it was, then they'd still be in business.
Right.
Well, I have a dream one for you too, Bruce. Actually, I have two of them. One of them can't happen because Paul Bearer is no longer here with them. I would love to have you, Paul Bearer, and Undertaker, just to talk about that run. You being the first manager of the Undertaker, Paul Bearer taking off from there, and Undertaker's great run. And the other one is you, Pat Patterson, and Kevin Sullivan. Three great minds that, put together some of the greatest stories that we've watched in different companies.
Well, yeah, that'd be interesting, because Pat to me, anytime that Pat and I sit down and talk, we go back and forth with old stories, and just we had a long run and a very interesting run. So I love talking with Pat. It would be interesting, any combination with Patterson.
Kev? My question is, obviously both of us are huge fans of your show, Something to Wrestle. We know that you said that the podcasting was never something that you had saw yourself doing before you did it. What are your thoughts now that you've been in, been in the game a little bit for now? You've had two-time podcast of the year.
Two-time.
Just what are your thoughts on the podcast game and, from where you started it?
Well, it's growing, and I'm learning a whole hell of a lot, so it's one of those ever-changing mediums that a lot of people don't really know that much about. It's the wild, wild west. So not only are we learning, but we're also creating and kind of innovating as we go, because there are no rules. People tried to tell us there were rules in the beginning, and we did our own thing. And a lot of it was by mistake. Before we knew it, we had a three-hour podcast and went, oh, my God, what are we going to do? They said, well, you need to divide that into three shows. I said, it's no good to do it in three shows,
right.
And we just let it go, and it became one of our highest rated podcasts ever. So that formula worked, and we continued to do that, and we continued. They told us don't cuss. They told us it's all guest oriented.
No guests.
We did our own thing, and we kind of forged our own path, and we're still learning. So there's a lot more to learn, a lot more to find out.
So Eric, your podcast is no more, right?
Or it's on hiatus, as they say.
Okay. So we have two guys here that are doing great in the podcast business. So you got two guys here that are getting started. We got you. You're basically two of the biggest guests we've had on the show. So just from the two of you, what are some ups and downs, and what are some things that we can learn from the two of you about podcasting to make our show much better?
Well, for me, you have very little to learn from me, because my podcast wasn't all that successful. But I can tell you, it's probably not a good idea to talk about politics unless you're doing a political show.
Okay.
If people tune in because they want to hear your point of view on politics, then I think it's great.
Right.
But in my case, I think one of the mistakes I made is people would tune in because they wanted to hear me talk about wrestling, and then I'd go off on a tangent talking about politics. And, that didn't work so well. Yeah. That's not why my show isn't, why I put it on hiatus. There's a lot of reasons why, and
right.
We'll be announcing our return here shortly.
Okay.
But just looking back now, one of the things I know I won't do again is talk about politics on a wrestling podcast.
Yeah, we try not to talk about politics or religion on our show.
It's like the two thing your mom always told you, the three things you
don't
talk
about. Yeah, you think
about.
I would have figured it out, right?
Bruce, any advice?
Be consistent. Just be consistent and be true to your audience. And if your audience is digging something, go there and give it to them. And if they're not, don't go there. But you have to listen to the audience. And everything Eric just said. If it's going to be a wrestling podcast, make it about wrestling. If it's going to be a football podcast, make it about football. But make it specific to the audience that you're speaking to, and don't deviate, because they don't care what you had for lunch or anything like that. They want to be entertained and be consistent.
Well, and that's one of the biggest reasons we came out to Comic-Con, because this is the first time we've been to one. And we were also out at fights at the Soundboard at Motor City Casino Friday, because our show is half MMA, half pro wrestling. So the biggest thing we've been trying to do now, since we're so new, is just trying to get our face out at as many, you know, MMA shows, wrestling shows, you know, the things that, like you said, go to our audience, trying to have our face be out there so that they can see, like, you know, we're out doing this and that and the other. Like, we're doing a big show they have here at in Novi. They're doing a big MMA show that's sold out, and we're doing a live show from there. So
that's key.
Yeah, like, that's that was one of the biggest things they were telling us when we got on at the network, is make sure you start getting your face out. So that's one of the biggest reasons we're here.
And you're here, you know, doing this Comic-Con. I saw you in October when you were here for Hell in a Cell. You had something to wrestle with show, and you're doing big shows at the Barclays Center, and I think one in New Orleans, I think, coming. No,
yeah, we got New Orleans coming up at WrestleMania. We're going to be in Columbus, Ohio next month. We're doing a hockey game.
Yeah, that's what they want, the hockey game.
In Florida, which is absolutely
hockey
nuts.
In Florida, how about that?
Yeah. But we're exploring all the different avenues and being able to get out there and be a part of as much as we possibly can.
So can we have a little bit of a something to wrestle with moment right now where I ask you some questions?
Sure.
Okay. I got the beard sort of like Conrad, but, you know, I'm a lot taller and blacker than he is. But Mantar.
Oh, yeah. Shit. He's got hooves.
Who booked that shit?
I did. So, Mike Halleck is a big guy, big bastard, great amateur wrestler, and the son of a bitch had huge feet. Vince kind of looked at him and just thought that he saw Mantar, and we went with it.
Is he high?
Mantar or me?
No, Vince. Vince.
Yeah. But it was during an era of characters,
yeah,
and larger than life characters. So that's what we did.
Okay. Like I said, you were here for Hell in a Cell, and Jim Cornette was with you, and I didn't get a chance to ask this question. Dirty White Boy, who became T.L. Hopper with you guys. Why T.L. Hopper? And I guess what I'm asking is, was I more caught up with his character in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, thinking that he would have been bigger than he really turned out to
be? Yeah, definitely. Because that's how you knew him. You knew him as the Dirty White Boy, but for the rest of the world had no idea who he was, had no idea who Tony Anthony Dirty White Boy was. And T.L. Hopper, again, looking and trying, he was working as a plumber. He was a licensed plumber. That's what he was doing when he came to work at the WWF.
Oh, so that was legit.
Yes.
Okay, I did not know that.
So, yeah, that's why, you know, people go, why would you do that? Paul Bearer, he was a licensed mortician, big boss man, was a prison guard in Cobb County, Georgia.
Wow.
That's how all those characters come to be. It's an extension of themselves. Tony Anthony was working as a plumber.
So what the hell happened with the Repo Man, though, man?
I wasn't there for that, so sorry.
Who was the Repo Man? I forget.
Barry Darso.
Yeah, okay.
That's
okay,
why
that's
I was
right.
I know he wasn't a Repo Man.
All right, and I asked Jim Cornette this question. I don't know if he really knew who I was talking about, but I'm hoping that you might know. I don't know what promotion this was. In like the early to mid-90s, there was a promotion in Houston that used to get broadcast up here for some weird reason. And I know Jackie was on there. I think she was Miss Texas at the time. And there was a guy that used to wear a mask named Odessa Slim. I've been trying to figure out for the longest who this guy was.
No clue.
No clue?
No clue. At all.
You got me on that one.
Yeah. All right.
I think it was that guy over there. Yeah. But ahead, shoot it over there, that guy. I'm pretty sure that's him. He lost weight.
But hey,
well,
or he gained weight, one of the two, because I don't know.
Like, he was a big guy.
Okay, he lost weight then.
Okay. Yeah. But talk to me about Miss Jackie, man. The contribution that she's made to the business, and from what I hear, a legit badass.
Oh, my God. Definitely a legit badass. And she could probably take half the guys on the roster.
But she's a sweetheart at the same time. Nicest person.
Yeah. She's one of those girls, man, that really wanted to be the best she could be, and she wanted to be a good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
So she learned her trade, and she went in and busted her ass to learn her trade. But, man, I love I love Jackie Moore to death. She's a good one.
Speaking of Miss Jackie, you know, we just had the first ever female Royal Rumble. Give us your thoughts on the Royal Rumble, like things you liked about it, didn't like, and is there anything that you think they should do different going forward, since it's obviously something they're going to do continue?
You know, I just thought for me, maybe doing a 20
okay.
woman Royal Rumble might have helped it along a little bit, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I did too.
In my opinion, I enjoyed watching that more than the men's Royal Rumble, actually, just because it was the first one.
Well, you know, it was different.
Yeah.
And so I liked it for that. And to make it different is probably why I would have done it for 20 for them to be a little bit more meaningful, I guess.
Makes sense.
If you will.
So, will we ever get a Brother Love episode?
Nope. Yes, of course we will.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely, at some point, because that was a big part of my life and a big part of my career.
Okay. Is there a topic that you're dying to talk about? Because I know Houston Wrestling was one of them that you just really wanted to talk about and finally got that one out. Is there one that you're just dying to actually talk about and get into?
The Slammies, the second Slammies that we did, which was a huge stage production in Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many great stories that came out of that that, you know, Conrad never saw it, so he's not interested in it. But I think people... You know, when you talk about all the things that happened behind the scenes in a week's worth of rehearsals at Caesars, and learning from Dick Ebersol and everybody there was some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. Earlier today, here at Astronomicon, Booker T was doing a panel, and a young man and his father came up and told a great story. You know, you kind of popped in, kind of had a bad time, but... Yeah, young man, you know, he had multiple heart surgeries, really wasn't able to, you know, play sports, and he was a big Booker T fan. And we had Booker T on the show yesterday, and I had to let him know that it was great to see a guy that looked like me, you know, prosper in this business, you know, five-time WCW champion, WWE world champion as well. And we kind of talked about this last night. And, Eric, I want to get your thoughts on WCW had Ron Simmons and Booker T as a champion. And your company was the first to have African-American world champion. Was that lost on you? Did you know that? Was that a part of the decision for putting them in those spots? Or was it just, hey, this was the best guy at the time?
It was both. We knew it. We were aware of it. We weren't oblivious to the fact that we were making history in that regard. But Ron Simmons was Ron Simmons.
Right.
You know, if he'd have been purple, he'd have been the world heavyweight champion. I mean, he was the guy.
Right.
For all the right reasons. But, yeah, no, we were very aware that Ron was going to be the first African-American champion. Booker T is the same thing for me. I mean, I didn't bring Booker T and his brother in. They came in right before I kind of took over the company.
Right.
But early on, they became one of my favorite teams and two of my favorite people to work with. They were really, really talented guys, and Booker's gone on as a single. He's an amazingly talented guy. And yes, he happens to be African American, and that's important.
Right.
But it's not why he got the gig. He got the gig because he was good.
Yeah, still is.
And as far as the WWF, WWE side, we had The Rock, Booker T as well, and Mark Henry. They've held championships. Once again, the fact that they were African-American going to that thought, or was it just they were the best guys at that time?
They were the guys with the character at that time to be the champion. So, I mean, that's all it was.
Okay.
Speaking of Ron Simmons, you know, I love the APA. That was the shit to me. I grew up during the Attitude Era. But one thing I always wondered, you know, especially once I got older and started watching some of his stuff from WCW when he was champ and all those things, you know, why do you think, you know, Ron never got over more on, like, a main event level in the WWE?
I think he did, and I think that it was a different time in Ron's career. Ron's career was winding down, and frankly, when Ron came in as Farouk, the very beginning, Ron was coming in for 1 year, and he was calling it a career at that point. He was done. He wanted to retire.
Okay.
So
that was a long year.
Exactly. And it just kept, you know, getting on and reinventing him and different things. So... Yeah. You plan for one thing and you get something else,
sure.
and you just try and capitalize on it.
Totally makes sense.
Why does Conrad hate Detroit?
What's there to like?
Whoa!
Whoa, man.
Whoa,
Hey, you'll find out when you try to get to the airport.
Yeah, he doesn't hate Detroit. Like,
He didn't show up for something to wrestle with. He's not here now.
Well, you know.
I feel a little slighted, man.
Ah, well, you can take it up with him in New Orleans this year. We'll go see him there.
Man, so what do you guys have planned for New Orleans? I don't know if you're doing anything down there for WrestleMania weekend.
I'll be down there for WrestleCade at this point. And, okay. I'm looking forward to being down there. I'm looking forward to the food. I love New Orleans, man. I love the food.
I keep hearing that because I've never been to New Orleans, and I keep hearing, bro, you got to eat the barbecue when I get down there. I was like,
barbecue, there's seafood.
Po' boys, gumbo, jambalaya.
All of it. Looks like I'm going to be getting fat when I get down there.
Oh, yeah. Not a good place to be on a diet.
Hey, bro.
Crawdads. That's my favorite thing. Let's go get about 5-gallon bucket of crawdads and some beer. Oh, that's sweet.
Speaking of beer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'll have one. Who's got one?
Where can we get it, man? I definitely want to try yours and Stone Cold's, man.
Oh, I'm not brewing mine anymore.
Really? Actually,
no, I've got it. I'm selling it to a guy by the name of Russ Francis, who used to play for the San Francisco 49ers.
Okay.
He's interested in buying it, so we're in those negotiations as I speak. I don't know if Stone Cold Steve Austin's making his beer anymore either.
Yeah,
he said. Is he? It's good beer. I've had it.
Yeah, I think you had it on his show, didn't you?
I had a bunch of it on his show. And a bunch of mine. Steve's beer is an IPA.
Yeah,
and
I typically
don't like IPAs. They're just too strong for me.
Right.
But Steve's is great. It's got that IPA finish to it, but it's a crisp kind of a finish.
Okay.
And it's one of those beers that after you have one, you want to have four more.
So another question that I was told to ask, I asked you this at the Dirty Dozen last night. My old football coach was asking, you know, I always knew that Eric Bischoff's from Detroit. He's like, where is he from in Detroit, though? So I was told to ask you where exactly you're at.
Yeah,
you're from
Detroit. I did not know that. I thought you were from Wyoming.
No. No, I grew up at basically 10 Mile and Gratiot.
Okay.
On Ford Street.
Okay.
Cool.
Not far from here, only about 8 miles from here, actually.
Wait, what school did you go to?
I went to Dort Elementary and Edgar A. Guest Junior High in Roseville.
Okay. Yeah. So, welcome home.
Dort Elementary is the same elementary school that Eminem went to.
Really?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
About 30 years after I left, but yeah.
Dropping knowledge on us over here, man.
I'm just smarting you guys up about the town you live in. What the hell is
that, man? What the hell?
So, Bruce, what do you have going on WrestleMania weekend?
We're going to be doing that the Saturday before WrestleMania. We're going to be doing our show at House of Blues, and you get your tickets at, what the hell, is notarib.com.
Okay.
So many different websites. But, yeah, notarib.com is a place to get tickets for WrestleMania. Also going to be at WrestleCon. And who knows what else. We might add a few things as time goes along.
So people going to NXT, would they be able to go to your
show? Okay. Absolutely. They'll be able to see our show in the afternoon and then go to NXT or ROH, whatever they want to go to.
Okay. Well, you got a last question for our guest, Kyle?
My last question for you is, with Raw 25 just having happened, and you definitely got the brother love pop, as you were talking about on the show, do you ever see you doing like more with the company? Obviously, it's a never say never thing, but I mean, I know you're enjoying the podcast thing and all that stuff, but I got to say it was pretty damn cool to see you on WWE TV.
Yeah. Who knows? The answer is I don't know, and you never do say never, but if the opportunity presents itself, hell, I'm going to investigate it, see what happens. Never know.
So, yeah, we kind of talked about that before, and I'm like, my question is, why would you right now? You got so much going on your own.
Definitely can see that, too.
Yeah.
Exposure. So, okay. You know, you always have to look at every opportunity and examine it and see what, if it works for us, we'll do it. If it doesn't, it won't.
Okay. So. Well, my last question for you guys is, right now, either one of you are in the Hall of Fame. I think both of you definitely deserve to be in.
Agreed.
One, do you see yourself ever getting in? And two, if not, give us a little bit of what your speech would be right here on this show.
Well, I don't ever see myself getting in. I do see Eric getting in, but I just don't think it'll ever happen, and is what it is.
So if you don't see yourself getting in, man, who would you want to thank? Who would you want to say?
I mean, there's just so many, but you know, pretty much it would just have to be those people that helped me along the way and believed in me, from Vince McMahon and Paul Bosch, and those guys gave me those opportunities.
Eric, you see yourself getting in?
You know, the only time I think about it is this time of year when people start asking me that question. You know,
right.
I don't I don't dwell on it. And I have very mixed emotions about it. Number one, I don't really think I'll get in it. I think there's still a lot of animosity on the part of some people. I know, I won't say animosity, but I think there's a tendency not to really want to accept some of the facts of history and the way things went down. So I think because of that, it's unlikely for me. And honestly, I'm okay with that because I think it would be awkward. I'm not a wrestler. You know, to me, this is my take. The WWE Hall of Fame should be about wrestlers. You know, people that learned the craft, people that started out, you know, going up and down the road and sleeping in their car for $25 a night and then went on to become superstars like The Rock, Ric Flair, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin. If they ever have an executive Hall of Fame just for TV guys or executives, yeah, sure, why not? But to be in the WWE Hall of Fame, I think it's just, it doesn't feel right to me.
Okay. If you guys were to ever have gotten inducted, do you have anybody that you would want to be the guy to induct you?
Bruce, I don't really have any friends. You know? Nobody that's ever worked with me likes me that much. So, I, you know, other than Bruce and, you know, maybe one of my kids and my wife on a good day, I'm kind of, it's a short list.
What about you, Bruce?
I think I know what you're going to say. I think you're going to say Pat or...
It probably would be Pat or Vince, but again, I really don't see it happening. But that, you know, Pat, because we've just shared so much of the struggle for so long.
Yeah. Well, any last words for the guests?
I just want to say thank you guys.
Thank
so
you
much
guys
for
having us on.
Man. I appreciate it. You know, growing up watching, you know, WCW and a big fan of the show and all that stuff, man. Cool. It's cool.
Well, thank you guys.
Good and, luck to you, man.
And thank my last words. I don't think you guys realize how much of an honor this really is to have the two of you on our show, man. Like, watching WCW and WWE growing up as a kid. I was a big fan of The Undertaker and Brother Love. I was a big fan of WCW growing up. So to have the two of you here and the influence that you guys have had on the business and, you know, the enjoyment that you guys gave me as a kid and even now, man, I just really enjoy it. And I want to thank you all for your contribution. And you guys are definitely Hall of Famers in my book. So thank you for doing the show.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, guys. Nice.
Anything I should need to plug or any...
We're good, man.
Okay.
We're good. Back to work.
Love the candy, by the way.
Yeah,
no problem.
Thank
right,
you
thanks
so
a lot,
much.
Guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.